SBS Radio.
Parev Haik, welcome to SBS Radio's Armenian program.
Parev Haik, thank you for having me.
Hi, commemorations of the 103rd anniversary of the Armenian Genocide are over. How many events were organized in Sydney and Melbourne? Can you please summarize the week-long events?
Thank you, Vahe. The 103rd anniversary of the Armenian Genocide, like all of these April commemoration weeks, allow us an opportunity to show our political leaders that it is actually very important to Armenian Australians for the Armenian Genocide to be recognised in Australia, which is something that we tell them every time we meet them on a daily or weekly basis as the Armenian National Committee. The events that were organised, there was a March for Justice in Melbourne, for the first time, where a few hundred of our brothers and sisters in Melbourne participated in a march across the city, followed by a program outside the State Library. There was also a commemoration in Melbourne. There was a March for Justice in Sydney, where we had again around 3,000 members of our community participate from Hyde Park to Circular Quay. There was also a commemoration evening in Sydney and a commemorative lecture in Sydney as well. There were smaller events that were organised by our sort of pocket communities, if you want to call them that, in Adelaide and in Queensland, which was very encouraging. For the main commemorations in Sydney and Melbourne, we had Chris Borjalian, the New York Times best-selling author, as a guest, keynote guest. And in Sydney's commemoration, we also had a New Zealand academic, Dr. Maria Armudjan, who is originally from Los Angeles but is now lecturing at the University of Auckland in New Zealand. Borjalian spoke about a lot of the research that led to his book, The Sandcastle Girls, which included very descriptive scenes of the Armenian Genocide, but also the connection of the motivators, the key motivating factors of the young Nazis, and connecting the young Nazis with the young Turks who they took examples of in order to commit the Jewish Holocaust some 30 years later. It was fascinating, very good presenter. Somebody from the arts was a newer type of guest that we've had at our commemorations, and I think the community very much appreciated his offering. And Dr. Armudjan is doing tremendous work in New Zealand, similar to what Bob Kenyan and Stanley did in New South Wales, along with the Australian Institute for Holocaust and Genocide Studies, where they uncovered the links between Australia and the Armenian Genocide. Dr. Armudjan is doing the same in New Zealand, and she's uncovering the links between New Zealand and the Armenian Genocide, considering New Zealand, obviously, is a key part of the Anzac tradition that we also experience here in Australia. So the academic stuff aside, I think media coverage is worth mentioning, because the Armenian Genocide being important to our community is always proven by boots on the ground. And everybody who participates in the March for Justice in particular are assisting in continuing the important tradition of everybody recognizing the Armenian Genocide is important to us, majority of us being descendants of survivors and victims of the Armenian Genocide. After the Sydney March for Justice and during it, we received unprecedented television coverage this year. There was SBS, ABC, 7 and 9 all ran stories in their primetime bulletins after the march. There were interviews that we conducted with 2GB Radio, SBS Radio, while the Australian Associated Press, which is a syndicated press service, covered it, and you know, our articles about our March for Justice, you know, reached as far away as regional newspapers across Australia. So I think the important aspect of the March for Justice, in one sense, is to confirm that this remains an important topic to us, but also there's a symbolic element, which is what I think actually motivates our community to be there. You know, 103 years ago, the Ottoman Empire forced the Armenians to a march to their death. A few survived, and for that few, it became the beginning of a march for justice. And we continue that march for justice every year until justice is achieved. Very successful commemoration week in the sense that we were able to raise our voice, remotivate ourselves, and also renew our vows with what seems to be a lifelong partner of everybody in the Armenian world, which is a fight for justice.
Hike, a few days ago, ANCA reported that South Australian Young Labour has passed a motion recognising the Armenian genocide. Could you give more information and how important is the recognition?
Sure. South Australian Young Labour recognised the Armenian genocide and Artsakh, the Republic of Artsakh, which I think makes it even more significant as a motion. First and foremost, it's important because we are having young people who are involved in politics from a young age, which are very likely to be the people that are involved in politics at a later age, so the future political leaders of local, state and federal governments, discussing, debating issues that are important to us, be that the Armenian genocide recognition and also Artsakh recognition, and coming to what is also very important, a unanimous decision on the matter. So they discussed it, debated it in a state where we're not, you know, the majority in terms of numbers or anything like that. But they did debate it and they came to a unanimous conclusion that they should recognise it as a chapter of the Young Labour Party. It's significant in the sense that we are building momentum as well, because all of these resolutions by third parties, so to speak, as in parties that are not necessarily one of the major political parties in office, releases the whole taboo that comes around the topic of Armenian genocide and Artsakh. And the political leaders of our country recognize that, you know what, they take notice of these things and they recognize that it's not such a taboo topic. It is something that we can talk about. It is something that we can face the truth on. And it's not just geopolitical diplomacy that should be determining our judgments when it comes to matters of truth and justice. And the young people very often lead the way, and they did so in South Australia on this occasion. In terms of details, I guess in February this year, there was a fundraiser that was being organised on Michael Atkinson, the retiring former Speaker of the South Australian Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Atkinson was the person who tabled the motion in 2009 to have the Armenian genocide recognised in South Australia, which was successful, and he was retiring. So they wanted to honour him, and in honouring him, they were thinking of inviting the Armenian community to some sort of a film screening. We suggested that they bring out Architects of Denial, which is a new film that covers the links between the Armenian genocide all the way to Artsakh, and how a crime unpunished is a crime encouraged, as was the case in Sumgait, Baku, Yerovabad, and the other massacres that occurred before the Artsakh movement. And at that cinema screening where we were present as well and addressed the audience, our local Armenian Cultural Association of South Australia supported it and attended. They handed a little award to Michael Atkinson. We also had the now opposition leader of South Australia, Peter Malinauskas, there. And Hovig Melkonyan, who's on our board and is an active member of the Labour Party himself, he organised for a good group of young Labour people from South Australia to be present to watch the film and to learn about our history. And it's amazing that they were there, they saw what happened, and they decided that we want to do something about this. And then we have been working with them since February, and it all resulted in this motion. So it's really important to know these backstories so that everybody realises that through their contacts and connections, there's a lot of things that we can do together in order to inform the public on our issues and have very important resolutions and motions such as this passed.
Hike, you spoke about youth and their political activity later on when they're adults. How ANCA encourages Armenian youth to be more involved in politics and political activity?
Yeah, no, look, I think that's a very, very good question. It's also a very pertinent question because it takes up a lot of the time of our national board, the initiatives that we're trying to bring forward to encourage greater political engagement by Armenian Australian young people. The ANC will be strong for a very long time, the more people we have involved in the political process. Obviously, there's the more basic ways that people become involved, in the sense that we always make sure that our office employs young people, which at the moment we have on shared hours, people like Olivia Dilanchan, Alex Galitsky and Michael Kolokosyan, all university-aged young people who are engaged in the political process. They go to Canberra all the time with us, sit in all the meetings. So that's your sort of higher level engagement where they're actually employed by the ANC and their political engagement has been warranted in that way, qualified in that way. We also have people on our national board who are younger and people like Karine Torosyan, people like Hovig Melkonyan, which also encourages their involvement in the political process. Then we have the more outreach aspects, which we're trying to introduce this year more than we've ever done before. So we reaching out to young people and trying to make them become more politically involved. And the way we're doing that is a few ways. I'll try to summarize them very briefly. First, the Armenian Youth Federation, which has often been the heartbeat of the Armenian National Committee's activities over many years. We have increased our engagement with the Armenian Youth Federation. We're often at their meetings. They're often in our office, and we're trying to make sure that the engagement in that process is always there. They're our sort of frontline activists when it comes to promoting advocacy efforts for the Armenian genocide, for Artsakh, and for all other matters. That's something that we're trying to build on. They've got political committees. Those political committees have agendas. The ANC works actively to promote those agendas and advise on those agendas ourselves. Then we have outreach in terms of our day school here in Sydney. So Hamaskane Golston College, at the end of the day, has students from K to 12. And particularly in that high school or senior school area, when people are thinking about their career choices and what they want to do in the future, we want to make sure they understand what impact politics has on everyday lives so that they consider politics as a career choice. Our colleague in the Armenian National Committee in America, Elizabeth Chuljan, said it very eloquently when she said the purpose of our youth outreach programs in the ANC world is so when we knock on the door of a politician in Canberra or wherever else, that an Armenian is opening that door. That's very important for us so that we have Armenians engaged in the political process, advancing their own careers in politics, which will inevitably be of use to Armenian national committees and other lobbying efforts from Armenians in the future. So to encourage that, we're engaging with the AYF, the school. We've also established something that we're going to announce very soon called Plug and Play, which is making our office an open office that any student, university-age student, who has time from university, rather than spending it in the library or out somewhere, they can come and spend that time in our office. Do their studies from our office. You know, there's coffee machines and games and a few other things that they can keep themselves busy with as well. And during that process, by spending time in the ANC office, they become more familiar with the work the ANC does. That's an initiative that we're going to be announcing very soon. In fact, this is the first time I'm talking about it publicly. Finally, there's an internship program. The internship program is where young people will be who actually make the choice that they want to get further in public life, be that politics, be that media, political think tanks, policy making, etc. They approach the Armenian National Committee, who will have funded programs to place them into the offices of politicians for work experience, for internships, and for other opportunities in order to advance their political goals. And thankfully, we had recently our first contribution to the ANCAU internship program, which is called the Hagop Kortyan Scholarship. Hagop Kortyan recently passed away, and he was one of the founding forces of the Armenian National Committee in Australia. His family has decided to contribute $10,000 a year to the Hagop Kortyan Scholarship to the Armenian National Committee's internship program, which is going to allow young people covering their expenses when they go to Canberra and do some interning, work experience, etc., and try to get them engaged in that political process. We've been talking to our friends in Parliament who are willing to take on some of these young people, and we're going to be making announcements in coming months about some of the results that have come from these outreach programs.
Staying on the Australian political scene, the Australian Conservative Party also recognised the Armenian genocide?
Yes, they did. So the Conservative is a party that many people consider it a breakaway party when Corey Bernardi wasn't very happy with some of the policies being taken by the Liberal Party, which he was a member of the Liberal Party. He formed what was called the Australian Conservatives. So they have an active senator in Corey Bernardi prosecuting their case on a day-to-day basis. He is the voice of Conservatives in Australia and a very legitimate political force when it comes to the crossbenchers in the Senate. And this is an important place for future resolutions that might come up in Australia, which include issues especially on the Armenian genocide. The Senate has for many years now, not just one electoral cycle, been a place with no major party having a clear majority and always having to negotiate with the crossbenchers, those in the middle. And those in the middle include the Australian Greens, for example, who have already got a policy recognising the Armenian genocide. They have, I think, 9 senators. The Nick Xenophon team, which I think has 3 senators, and they also have a policy that recognises the Armenian genocide as a political party. And now we have the Australian Conservatives joining that group. We started discussions with Senator Bernardi in February. You know, we asked him to consider this as a party position. He was very generous with his time. He gave us the opportunity to prosecute our case and give all the evidence that he would need to conduct his own research and take it through his party processes, which he did in March and April. And on the 24th of April, his party revealed that it is now party policy that the Armenian Genocide is recognised by the Australian Conservatives, and we thank him for that.
Hank, in a press release, ANCA stated that there is a discrepancy between DFAT and Ministers Wells and Bishop on the issues of Nagorno-Karabakh and the Armenian genocide. What's the background of the story?
Sure. This, we believe, is probably one of our most important battlegrounds. Politics is about the front line, but also the background. And the background, as in who works behind the curtains, is mainly departments and the bureaucracy. We weren't having much luck with understanding where the bureaucracy actually stands when it comes to the Armenian genocide and Artsakh, because we were getting different answers from different sources. For example, Concetta Fierravanti-Wells, a senator from New South Wales, she is the Minister for International Affairs in the Pacific. She went over to Baku to mark the 25th anniversary of diplomatic relations between Australia and Azerbaijan as an official visit. So the government sent her to be part of that visit. During that visit, she, you know, visited things like the Heydar Aliyev Memorial and a lot of things that might get under the skin of Armenian Australians that are watching. But importantly, she delivered a speech, which is also live on the DFAT website, the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade website, where she said that Australia stands with Azerbaijan when it comes to the issue of Nagorno-Karabakh. This was confusing because in the next sentence, in the same speech, she said that Australia backs the OSCE Minsk Group's peace process. So the OSCE is the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, which has a Minsk Group co-chaired by the US, Russia, and France to try to resolve the ceasefire and bring it to a peace agreement between Armenia, Azerbaijan, and the Republic of Artsakh. They don't have a position which backs Azerbaijan or backs Armenia. They want the conflict to be resolved on the grounds of non-use of force, on the grounds of the rights to self-determination and territorial integrity. So it was confusing that Concetta Fierravanti-Wells is saying Australia backs Azerbaijan's territorial integrity when it comes to the Nagorno-Karabakh matter, but at the same time says Australia it backs the OSCE peace process. You can't do both. You either back a process which doesn't take sides or you take sides. So we were very confused by this, and we had been seeking to meet with Concetta Fierravanti-Wells for a while, and we had a meeting with her. We had meetings with the Department of Foreign Affairs, and none of these meetings were fruitful in getting a genuine answer out of them. Everybody in DFAT was protecting Concetta Fierravanti-Wells and saying that her statement stands without repeating it, but they were saying it stands. Concetta Fierravanti-Wells I don't think was very knowledgeable on the issue, and she might have said a few things that she shouldn't have said, but the department wasn't going to throw her under the bus. However, we decided to go down the path of Senate estimates. So Senate estimates allows for every department or entity that is government funded to be questioned during budget time by special committees in the Senate. You would recall that there was Senate estimates around SBS's position on the Armenian genocide at one point. So we used that process, and Senator Rex Patrick asked the question through an unnoticed question. It was the way the process is called. When you don't get the question done live because of lack of time, you submit it in writing. So he submitted this question in writing about Australia's position, considering what Concetta Fierravanti-Wells said. And the response that we received is what we published in the press release the other day, which is that Australia backs the OSCE Minsk group process. They did not repeat the Concetta backing of Azerbaijan, and they doubled down on the part that we want them to double down on, which is backing the OSCE Minsk group process. So effectively, DFAT has officially distanced itself from these comments by Concetta Fierravanti-Wells. When it comes to Dooley Bishop, very similar. In 2014, she said that Australia does not recognise these events as genocide, which is tantamount to denial, because, I mean, even America doesn't say we don't recognise these as genocide. What they say is we want the two parties to come together. There were massacres. There were deaths. You know, Armenians suffered terribly. They should come together and reach a resolution. They just don't use the word genocide. What she said is we don't recognise it as genocide. This was confusing for us. So obviously we've been trying to get a response, a straight response from the Department of Foreign Affairs on this since 2014. And through this same Senate estimates process, and Senator Rex Patrick, he submitted a question, I should say, and the response he received was that Australia has returned effectively to their old position, which is not calling it a genocide, but not talking about the fact that we don't recognise it as a genocide or denying the genocide, encouraging both parties to come together and resolve these matters that are historical, blah, blah. We're not happy at all with the response and the position of DFAT, but at least Australia has moved away from Foreign Minister Bishop's letter to what was an Ankara-funded lobby group in Australia. So they've moved away from that position, and they've said, they've clarified that Australia's position is this. This issue obviously needs to be investigated a lot further. We need to try to unpack these issues a lot further, and we need to make sure that Australia and the Department of Foreign Affairs has a very good understanding of everything to do with Artsakh, including this Azerbaijani laundromat, which has seen Western politicians paid out by the Aliyev family, the Aliyev regime, in order to try to get some favourable coverage on Azeri issues, such as, you know, the disregard for human rights and a lot of other matters, including transparency.
There's another Australian MP that thinks that Australia should get lessons of democracy from Azerbaijan.
Yeah, look,
yeah, it's Craig, a bit funny.
Yeah, Craig Kelly, God love him. He went over to Baku. This is his second visit to Baku. The last time he went there in 2016, it was to monitor a referendum. The referendum was actually allowing for Aliyev to extend his rule, and as in no longer have term limits, but also next time he gets elected as dictator or president or whatever you want to call him of Azerbaijan, he gets elected for a 7-year term. The same referendum in 2016 was also allowing Azerbaijan to elect younger presidents in the future, because if anything, you know, happened to Aliyev, he obviously wanted his son to take over from him, and his son is only 19, and I think the threshold was something like 35 as a minimum age to be president. So that referendum changed the age to 18 so that should anything happen, the Aliyev rule can continue, considering, of course, that an Aliyev has ruled Azerbaijan since the beginning of their independence from the Soviet Union. Kelly went and monitored those elections in 2016, and he came back and said, you know, we've got a lot to learn from Azerbaijan's democracy. He got a few slaps in the media, but this time we made sure that the media and the Australian public were a lot more aware of what was going on with this most latest trip. So he led a delegation to monitor the election of Aliyev. And during that election, there were a lot of other monitors from around the world, particularly European countries, particularly organizations like the OSCE and PACE. And all of these people who observed those elections, they all came out with statements. And their statements were things like, while, you know, we were given free passage to see what was going on during the elections, what we need to recognize is Azerbaijan is not a free country. And when you're not a free country and journalists are jailed and, you know, opposition leaders are not able to actually mount serious campaigns, and the president is elected by a majority of like 80-something percent, we can't talk about the actual electoral process because the country is not free itself. So any comments they made about the election specifically, they qualified those comments by talking about the natural environment in which these elections were taking place. However, Mr. Kelly, who is the chair of the Australia and Azerbaijan Parliamentary Friendship Group, he came out saying, oh, you know, Azerbaijan's democracy is the best thing since sliced bread. We have a lot to learn from their electoral process because they take fingerprints at the polling stations, et cetera, et cetera. So we obviously were flabbergasted by this, and the media was also interested in this. So questions were asked, and a journalist named Michael Koziol in the Sydney Morning Herald and the Fairfax Syndicates published an article which completely destroyed, you know, Craig Kelly's logic when it came to Azerbaijan. And that article made its way through the parliament because of our advocacy, of course. And most recently, an MP named Peter Khalil brought it up during a Sky News television segment where he completely blasted Craig Kelly. And, you know, the article and also Khalil's takedown of Kelly have revealed that Azerbaijan's government actually paid for Kelly's trip. And in the article, he said his comments were not really affected by the fact that Azerbaijan paid for his trip, but didn't actually deny that his comments are affected by that. And his position has changed somewhat, so we do need to give him a little bit of credit here. He's now at least admitting that Azerbaijan is run like a family business and an Aliyev has ruled it since independence. But we do expect more from him. We've requested to meet with him. You know, Craig Kelly is someone who's been on the record speaking for Armenian Genocide Recognition back in the day. So he's definitely someone who, you know, who's had a relationship with us, and we completely find it impossible but that he's taken a position like this on Azerbaijan. For us, you know, it shows that we show no favours when it comes to our issues. It's our issues that guide us. It doesn't matter which party you're in, you know, what your position has been in the past. Your position now is what matters most, and all we're looking for is people that stand on the side of truth and justice. When it came to Azerbaijan, and considering Azerbaijan commits the murders it commits across the border in Artsakh every other day, we weren't going to let Craig Kelly on this occasion not answer for this. And we do hope that the ensuing coverage, which was a pretty major issue in the Australian press for about at least a week, you know, in this era of the 24-hour news cycle, that's pretty impressive. That it was still newsworthy after a week. In fact, just a few days ago in The Guardian, an Alex MacKinnon piece cited the fact that Kelly made these remarks as well. There was a second article in the Sydney Morning Herald as well that alluded to this. The fact that this issue achieved press coverage and national attention for about a week, we hope will be a warning to Australian politicians. We're not telling them not to go to Azerbaijan. We want them to go to Azerbaijan. We want them to see what Azerbaijan is and to recognise that Australia should not be a partner to a country like that, should in fact pressure that country towards democracy. And the closer Azerbaijan gets to democracy, the more likely it will be a place that will recognise the Republic of Artsakh and allow Armenians over there to live in peace.
Hayk, thank you very much for the interview and the information.
Thank you, Vahe. Thank you very much.
Tell us what you think. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter.